salt and battery while unarmed by means of force likely to produce great bodily injury. Well, now, here's my assessment of this, and shoot me down. I think that because in the definitions we used serious bodily injury, I think because we use such phrases as serious bodily injury,
substantial pain.
Well, deadly weapon, dangerous weapon, deadly physical force, in the substantive crimes that we've already covered, I think it's appropriate that they be defined. However, I'm not sure that it's necessary to define plain physical injury. For the reason that if we define plain physical injury in the definition section here, it opens it up for a motion to dismiss prior to trial because the defense attorney has something to shoot at, whereas it may be a question of fact. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But anyway, I don't think it's necessary to define physical injury in sub 3.
Well, I think that the way he's got sub 4 written and sub 5 written and sub 6 written and sub 7 written, that 3 becomes necessary.
Well,
really what you're saying is that that this is an injury. An injury results in the fact you can't use your left arm anymore, or that your eye has been hurt badly, or something else. Now, serious physical injury is if it's going to put you in a hospital for a while, or if it's going to lay you up and you can't do something else. And certain kind of physical force is that which creates physical injury sufficient to put you into this. I think that the hang-up I've got on this is, and I suppose it really isn't a problem, look at substantial pain and the difficulty of measuring substantial. I presume this is a question for the jury to decide, and it isn't going to create a problem for an appellate court to go back and say, we've looked over the record and find out that it wasn't substantial pain.
Well, here's where our doctor can make his contribution. And I suppose you've drawn a line of demarcation between protracted, protracted impairment, but in 4, and you just have impairment in 3. But what is impairment? I mean, does it come within the definition of physical injury here, where maybe your arm is impaired for 5 minutes? Is that just plain, is that an impairment within the meaning of this?
Well, yeah, I think that's an impairment, although not a protracted.
What if it's, if
you've got it broken and you're going to cast for 6 weeks, then I think you're in protracted. Now, where the stopping point is in the 5 minute end and the starting point on the 6 week end, I don't know.
Well, I think we can have 4 and 5 without 3, because everybody knows what a physical injury means.
I think that substantial pain is a real hang-up, and I think that it's that physical injury what is a physical injury, Dr. Graham?
Medically, disruption of tissue.
We're going to let you on, sure.
All right.
Striking.
Well, would you, you were called as an expert witness to testify that the victim of this crime had been injured, and the legal definition of physical injury was impairment of physical condition or substantial pain, and the guy got a bloody nose. Would you call that, would you say that that's within the definition of physical injuries?
Yeah.
And how about substantial pain if somebody had some kind of an emotional condition that their tooth started to ache every time they got excited?
Well, that's not physical, that's a mental.
Yeah, but this causes substantial pain.
Substantial pain, if we assume...
Why is to include that along?
Pain's when you hurt.
If we assume that substantial pain, the problem I have with pain, the pain portion of it is referring to the intensity of the pain or the duration of it, or both. You can have something that hurts like blazes for 30 seconds and you're done with it. You get an electric shock and things just tingle all over for a little while, but the minute they turn off the juice, you're done with it. It isn't like the black eye that may...
But while the juice is on, it's substantial.
While the juice is on, she's pretty heavy. If you're getting an electric shock that lasts a hundredth of a second, then the doctor can come in and prove that it really hasn't reached your brain cell and gotten back to your finger by that time.
Well, you say, Mr. Chandler, that you feel that 3 is necessary to 4, 5, 6, and 7. Now, Mr. Spaulding and I apparently question this. Tell us why you feel that it's necessary.
Well, because it seems to me that the normal concept of physical injury is limited to part of the average person would be limited to impairment of physical condition.
It's limited to.
Yeah.
This goes beyond
injury.
That.
And if you're going to have substantial pain as one of the elements of the thing, you've got to have the definition of it in 3.
Well, can't you have an injury without an impairment of the physical condition?
No. Or perhaps a mental condition.
But. A physical injury without impairment of physical condition.
No, I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so.
I think that a physical injury means impairment of physical condition, period. Yep. It means that I got to be cut, or I got to have a swelling, or I've got to have something broken, or I've got to, something of this sort.
Well, is this common? This is it's axiomatic.
That's true. That's so far as it goes. But the mere fact that I've been pained by something without being cut or having a swelling or having something broken would not, in my connotation, mean a physical injury. In this, it would.
What if you had your breath stopped without any disruption of tissue?
Then it would be a mental problem rather than a physical problem. Because you really wouldn't affect it physically, you would affect it mentally.
What do you mean if your breath was cut off?
Well, wouldn't that impair your physical condition?
What do you mean? You get something stuck in your
throat?
Somebody gets hold of your hand over your nose and mouth so you can't breathe.
Then there's nothing. If you can't breathe, if you held something over your mouth, if you held it there too long, you'd disrupt tissues. If you didn't hold it there too long, you wouldn't disrupt tissues. Cause you a lot of mental stress. There's no question about that.
Some pain.
And a lot of pain.
Well, I really held it over.
All right. What you're saying, Bob, is that it's axiomatic that physical injury means impairment of physical condition. Period. You've got to hang up with substantial pain.
Well, as I see it, the addition of pain is a necessary thing.
It is a
necessary thing. If you leave it out, then you're limiting, as far as the juror is concerned, that physical injury means an impairment of physical condition. And the guy comes in and says, he held his hand over my nose and mouth, and show us your bruises. Give us your doctor bill for setting your arm, or show us the scar from your cut.
Well, for example, say you had an assault case where the defendant struck the victim in the stomach with his fist and knocked the wind out of it. I don't think that, as far as your breathing is concerned, would be much different
than no,
holding
no,
the hand over the mouth.
Thing, yeah.
But I think certainly that that the victim would suffer substantial pain from such a blow.
My hang up on the thing is the definition of substantial.
Well,
and how you prove substantial, and how you convince a jury that What is substantial?
Well, of course, as applied to evidence, substantial evidence means more than a scintilla.
More than a scintilla, yeah.
Right.
Now,
my point is, if you put this in, you're going to have to define substantial, and if you don't, you're saying, well, we know that substantial means more than a scintilla. By the same token, it seems to me that we know, just because we're men and women of common sense and general knowledge, we know what physical pain is, or physical injury is, and that the only necessity to define physical injury comes when we start talking about serious physical injury, because there we have a line of demarcation.
You got to remember here, we got three law school graduates, a medical school graduate, and so forth. I'm talking about the guy on the jury to whom just pain, without any other disruption of tissue or anything else, is, in his opinion, not going to be much of an injury to a guy. I think you have to add the pain part if you're going to think that. What you're saying is that you can have two kinds of physical injury, one which is a bruise or a break or something like that, which may or may not be accompanied by pain. And another one, which can be just pain alone, or which can be accompanied by the break or the scar or cut or whatever.
Well, I suppose that we're talking really about the assault cases here more than anything that we've defined.
Primarily,
by
it'd be primarily assault.
All right.
Could apply under robbery, too.
It applies to, yeah.
No, assault and robbery, but not just plain robbery.
Well, we have...
I think it's in the arsenal. Death or physical injury.
But one problem is that a person...
Well...
Some things will cause substantial pain to one person where the same thing wouldn't cause substantial pain to another. Depends on their... threshold of pain.
Well, I think your point about law school Americans being graduates is not well taken. I think the common lay person that probably has as much experience with pain as anyone else does is probably as well qualified.
Oh, I don't say he doesn't have as much experience with pain. I just say he doesn't have as much experience with the English language. Mm-hmm. And that he's not going to differentiate physical injury to him doesn't mean a headache, which could be pretty serious physical pain, and if caused without a bruise on the noggin or a cut in the head, would be an injury under this definition, and I don't think the average person would be able to
stop. We only brought one book, one I thought that we'd need today, and so there may be a draft you're looking for, if you're looking for.
The only thing I got is how do you prove substantial, and I guess you can do that, so.
We've got a technical difference here, really, because you're right, you've got a better memory than I, but we talk about bodily injury in arson, but you made a judgment, Don, that physical injury was a better term than bodily injury. That means, and you should make a note of this, Maxine, that assuming that we adopt physical injury here, we're going to have to go back through and change bodily injury to physical injury, right?
Right.
Now, but the hang up I get, look, a person commits the crime of arson in the first degree if by starting a fire or causing an explosion, he intentionally damages any property, whether his own or another's, and such act recklessly causes bodily injury to another person. Okay? The defendant sets off an explosion and it damaged property, and maybe it blew up a house that the guy was in, and part of the debris from the explosion hit the victim. Say he got hit in the stomach with a flying piece of 2x4. Well, that guy was just darn lucky that he didn't get killed. He got hit in the stomach, and because he had on a lot of clothes or something, it didn't cause substantial pain, and it didn't impair him. And I think a jury could very easily find that there wasn't substantial pain here, and so therefore bodily injury wasn't caused, and this wasn't arson in the first degree. Now, rebut it.
Well, it puts him certainly in the second degree. It puts him in danger of bodily injury.
I think he made a good argument for having it in there myself. But,
well, I don't know.
And of course, here's
what he should be in the first degree.
Well, I think he should too, but if I've got to hang up on substantial pain.
Well, my hang up on substantial is the ability of the prosecution to prove it. And I don't have that. I'm going to talk myself out of it. And I do think that the definition in three, because of the two elements, which may or may not be related, may be separate, may be related or may be separate, that we need both of them, because we get into serious physical injury.
You can dump that thing in there and turn on the juice and it'll stay hot.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think that's what it'll do. Only it's still hot there.
Of course, the place where this definition is going to be important, although I think it can apply in some of these other drafts as well, is assault. And of course, the assault draft has been prepared. It has not been typed. The drafting, at least the preliminary drafting, is completed. And the assault draft was predicated on certain assumptions, since these terms hadn't been defined. And one of those assumptions was that definitions comparable to these two, physical injury and serious physical injury, would be defined. And I frankly hate to see the subcommittee at this stage throw out a definition until you can relate it to some of these other articles. Now, I don't think there's any really satisfactory solution to this, because we've got to give some guidelines here to drafting in some of these other areas. And but I do feel that substantial should be in there, and I don't think, however, it should be defined. I think that there's some language that's going to appear in the code that shouldn't be defined. Certain adjectives you're going to use, that you get to the point where you're defining yourself to death pretty soon, I think. You over-define, and I would think that an instruction could be framed under this statute. Whether the court would give an instruction of what substantial meant, I don't know, but even without it, it would seem to me that the jury ought to be able to apply this.
The court's going to be instructing on substantial.
But if you're...
I think it is, because I think it's going to be the subject of a great deal of, at least in some cases, going to be the dividing line on between the prosecution and the defense. And the court's going to have to instruct. Everybody will assist them.
But...
Do we have physical bodily injury from presently defined in the case law?
Oh, bodily injury is defined, yeah, in the case law, sure.
As what?
Well, generally, as I show in my comments on page 3, the annotation of cases in ALR says that bodily injury means some form, it means a harmful effect upon the body caused by some form of external violence. This is generally what the cases have held.
Don, let me approach it from
and
another.
The restatement of torts, I set out their definition of bodily harm. Yeah.
This goes back to something we were discussing at the full commission meeting the other day about the desirability of relying upon the precedent in the case law where possible, not necessarily in every instance, but where appropriate, rather than finding something in the statute. Now, if this is well covered in the case law, why enact it statutorily to create problems? I'm thinking, for example, of how the definition of a dangerous weapon, for example, has changed over the years in the decisions. You know, I mean, you have a broken beer bottle, for example, can be a dangerous weapon. And I think properly that I'm trying to draw an analogy, and it's kind of weak. And frankly, I don't know where we are.
Well, we have lots of things which, in their normal use, are useful tools. A pitchfork is a useful tool and becomes an extremely dangerous weapon. In another use, I pick a crowbar. Pretty handy sort of gadget to have. Pretty tough on you if somebody whacking you over the head with it. I'll bet that'll cause substantial pain. Nobody would argue with that.
Well, that would be a simple case.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, where is our hang-up here? Huh? The laws, right?
Well, our hang-up, I think, is whether we're going to leave in sub 3 of section 3 or whether we're going to delete it. And if we're going to leave it in, whether we're going to leave the last clause in there, or substantial pain, or whether we're going to cut it off after condition.
Well, Bob thinks that the main, and I guess only, need for sub 3 is because of substantial pain. Without sub 3.
Without substantial pain, I agree. I don't think you need sub 3. I think you can go in. If you're going to assume that people know what physical injury is, then you can go ahead and define serious physical injury without.
Well, I have some misgivings as to whether we, on a subsidy basis, whether we ought to take cognizance of substantial pain without physical injury. Would you get into this gray area where we are in the civil law, whether we're going to punish or give damages for people who are emotionally affected by some occurrence that they are not a participant in, like a mother seeing her child killed or something, that causes her very well to cause her physical pain, but are you going to prosecute for doing that to the mother? I think there is a policy question on whether we want to legislate criminally on this substantial pain business without physical injury.
Well, I wouldn't go for substantial pain in the circumstance you mentioned. The case you mentioned is a physical injury. Not as a criminal physical injury, you have other remedies, of course.
Well, no, it's quite an argument in the civil law whether that kind of a thing creates a cause of action, too. And it's kind of the same thought that could get into the criminal law with this sort of a concept.
Well, I think of a substantial pain in this connection as being caused by the physical act of another upon the body of the person who feels the pain, not a third-party relationship, but me looking out the window and seeing somebody run over on the street out here and suddenly getting a toothache. No, I don't see that. This is some guy who punches me someplace where it doesn't bruise me or break anything or do anything else, but it hurts like hell.
Well, I don't know where we are.
To relate this once more to assault, let me point out this, that the draft on assault has followed generally the approach that the model penal code and the recent revisions in New York and Michigan have taken, and that is to define an assault in terms of a completed act and not what we think of sometimes in, now as a, an incomplete battery, for example. An assault would, and the definition of assault is tied in with the idea of inflicting of injury on the victim. Now, the Model Penal Code definition of assault is in terms of bodily injury or serious bodily injury, depending on, the seriousness of the injury would affect the degree of the crime. New York went along with that rationale, but felt that since we're tying assault in directly with an injury to the victim, that these terms should be defined, and I think they should too.
New York and Michigan both include the word substantial pain.
Yes, and the reasoning is, although it, I'm guessing to a certain extent, because they don't articulate their reasons in their commentary, but I think the reason is, since we're, you're tying these in with other crimes, you're tying this definition into some of these other crimes, such as assault, that they're trying to distinguish between the kind of act that inflicts just a minor or inconsequential pain upon the victim, and saying that this has to be more than that. There has to be some substantial pain. But at the same time, they don't want to limit the definition of physical injury just to some actual physical impairment, some damage to the tissues, the doctor says. I think they felt that pain should enter into it as far as the victim's concerned.
Well, how about saying trauma to the body?
Trauma's inclusive, all right. I think you've got to include substantial pain in this thing. I think it's important to, in some way, trauma would include it, but it's just very important too, because the instance is that you bring up with assault, okay, the solar plexus punch, you're dislocating an arm, and there's relocating it, things which cause a great deal of pain would have no visible means.
If you say trauma, you haven't approved it, because the only people who now understand trauma are the lawyers and the doctors, and so the judge or the lawyers or somebody has got to redefine what trauma is, right, and we come back to substantial pain.
Well, let me reiterate my...
As bad as it is, it's the most understandable.
I guess what I'm saying is that I think there are instances related to assaults where there should be a criminal proscription, even though maybe there wasn't substantial pain inflicted. And I think this is a departure from the present law, and it makes it harder to prove a simple assault. But of course, I find it hard to get a point of reference here. I think you're making it harder on the prosecution.
Well, I don't think so. I think you're saying to the prosecution, saying that you've got either one of two grounds you can prove physical injury. They may be connected, they may be related, they may be completely independent of each other.
You mean impairment or pain?
Yeah. This says impairment or substantial pain. You can have pain without any impairment, and you can have impairment without a great deal of pain, or you can have, and most often the cases, you'll have the two combined.
And you can have impairment with very little pain.
That's what I say. You get knocked out, and then somebody steps on your arm and breaks it. For a while, anyway, and properly sedated before you come to, you never do feel any pain.
I hate to bring this up because it involves one of the definitions, but does assault require physical injury or pain?
No.
No, it doesn't.
Well,
it
doesn't.
It doesn't now, but the new definition of assault will.
Well, is that our decision, that it will or it will not?
It will.
It'll be a decision of the commission, but you see...
Oh, this commission is freewheeling.
You see, in assigning these, in making the drafting assignments, we have to break it down in certain segments. And the segment that includes assault is in a different subcommittee.
I would certainly not want to receive assault restricted to physical injury.
I would want, now this is the first time I've heard of this, but that's sure a departure from the traditional concept of assault.
Yeah.
And I can't foresee my instincts allowing me to vote for such a departure. But nevertheless,
well, the only difference, John, the only difference will be that what we would think of now as an assault will actually be an attempted assault. It would amount to an attempted assault under the new definition. An assault would be the same as what we think of as an assault and battery.
Why not stay with assault and battery as two distinct things?
Well,
put in those old words, people won't know we were revised anything.
Of course. I think that's another, I think that's a separate question.
That's another subject, yeah.
And,
I think a non-lawyer member of this outfit, I think the commission ought to buy us a set of words and phrases.
I think that they, I think that I ought to get a set for myself after being educated in the Chandler School of Law. All right. I think we've thrown it around. Are we ready for a motion on sub three? Does, is there any further discussion that we can fruitfully follow here?
Well, I move we approve subsection 3 of section 3.
All right, there's a motion that we approve sub 3 of 3. Is there any further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Apparently it's passed.
I didn't like it very well, but I didn't vote.
That went fast.
Boy,
2-1. All right.
Can I change my vote, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, you want to.
Well, let me retract my vote if I can, and let's open it for discussion again if we can. Can we do that?
All right.
Because I think there's serious doubt. There's one person abstaining and voting against. My point here is that the whole thing seems to revolve around this word substantial still to me. That's where my reservations are contained, and they're in that itself is a term which has to be redefined or provides latitude. Is there any way that any of us can think of redefining that word so that it has more definite limits?
That's my hang up, and your question is germane to the whole discussion that we've had for the last 35 minutes. And
this comes to the question of what a jury is going to believe is substantial. It's going to be the result of the jury listening to the complaining witness tell how much pain he felt and try to put it into words, of the prosecuting attorney helping him do so, of the defense attorney trying to minimize it, and of the judge saying somewhere along the line before the jury gets the case, substantial means.
Right. That brings up the point under discussion, and that is that Don has said that we need physical injury defined because we have to give the juries and the prosecutors and defense attorneys and the judges some guideline of what we mean. But so we defined it. But by doing so, we raise a necessity for an additional definition. Ergo, don't we need to institute some sort of a guideline for the judges and lawyers to follow with respect to substantial? And if so, where does it end?
Doesn't there exist now case law, certainly many, many definitions of substantial?
There
does. More than trivial or more than...
More than a scintilla.
Well, substantial damages.
Yeah.
Are more than nominal.
There does, but there
every
also.
Every definition you create is going to create the need to define the word that you use to define the make the initial definition nominal.
There are definitions in the case law of substantial presently, just like there are presently definitions in the case law of physical injury. Right.
Yeah.
All right. So if we don't need to define substantial in the statute, why do we need and go to the case law to get a definition? Why do we need to define physical injury?
Well, because this goes beyond the case definition of physical injury.
The only thing you can do in your system is to leave substantial out and then say in this place physical injury means impairment of physical condition or pain.
Well, of course, pain is entirely subjective, isn't it?
That's too subjective to me. Any pain, little pain,
but...
This at least limits it to...
The one thing I don't like about it is that you can have pain caused by an occurrence without any physical contact.
Pain caused by what, please?
Some occurrence. Is what I say, an occurrence.
Would that be physical pain, though?
Well, we don't say physical pain.
We don't say
pain
physical pain. We say substantial pain. I would agree with Bruce. I don't like that possibility of third party caused pain arrangement without a physical action on the part of the actor. He's got to do something physically to me before I think that he's caused me physical injury by pain.
And something might cause a very, very minor physical contact with some people with a substantial pain resulting, just because they're freaks.
But the guy who gets a serious pain or a substantial pain from something that doesn't cause me a substantial pain, are we going to say that he can't complain against you just because he hurts more if he's touched on the upper arm than I do if I'm socked on the jaw?
Maybe it's because he is looking for $100,000 damages, which actually causes him to have pain.
$100,000 caused me a lot of
pain. I know. I mean, there's a lot of things that go to, and some people cause actual pain that may not be the subject of criminal law. That's basically what I don't like about it. I'm not very worried about the meaning of the word substantial.
Well, rephrase your objection so that I can understand it completely.
Well, I think that what it gets down to is because of the vagueness of the word pain, of the meaning of pain.
But would you want to strike it entirely?
Yes, I think I would favor that. Of not having a criminal sanction for causing pain where there is no physical injury.
Well,
it could cause you a lot of pain without injuring you.
You would then just say physical injury means impairment of physical condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say leave it all out because
yeah,
we
if
know
you don't
that.
Have a pain in there, you don't need it.
Well, that was my original objection. My was we know what it is. We're creating. We get back to the thing that causes me so much pain, and that is that. If by creating sections here that are going to compound the problems that the courts and the lawyers have with respect to the criminal law, we haven't fulfilled our function as a criminal law revision commission.
Yes,
and we have to keep it as concise and strive for clarity, and I see things like this as just creating new problems.
We are, in this case, I think, making new law. As far as this state is concerned, we're not making new law as far as Michigan is concerned, as New York is concerned, perhaps, probably, as California is concerned, and so forth. By saying that you don't have to break a guy's arm or bruise him or cut him to create a physical injury. That if you hit him in the solar plexus, not hard enough to rupture his heart or whatever you do down there if you hit him too hard, but it hurts. It hurts like the blazes, and it takes him some time to recover from it. It's not just an instantaneous thing. That you have, that is a physical injury, the jury to decide how serious it is, the same as if you put him in the gutter and stomp on his leg and break it.
I think that's a physical injury under the present meaning of the word physical injury.
Yeah, I think it is too.
Well, why then do New York and Michigan feel it is necessary to add the second, in effect, in words, the second category? First, the impairment, and second, the pain, either or basis.
What does their commentary say about that,
Doug? Their commentary doesn't say anything under the definition section.
I'll doubt if they spent half as much time on it as we have.
Well, and I'll tell you, of course, and from a drafting point of view, this is a real problem. And I know from reading the literature from some of the other states, the way they did it, for example, the way Connecticut did it, they tentatively decided to adopt the New York definitions, period. And then they ran with it from there and drafted their substantive sections with a tentative agreement by their commission that these would be what the definitions they would follow, rather than, because, as I said before, we've got a chicken or the egg type of problem here. And it's difficult for this subcommittee, and I recognize that problem, for us to sit here and try to decide on these definitions when we can't really read them in the context of the specific crimes. Now, the draft on assault generally follows these other codes. There's some differences, but the general idea that an assault requires a physical injury is encompassed in our draft. Now, under their assault section, the New York code, which uses this definition of physical injury, they have this to say that, well, first of all, let me tell you what assault in the third degree is. With intent to cause physical injury to another person, he causes such injury to such person or to a third person. Or he recklessly causes physical injury to another person. Or with criminal negligence, he causes physical injury to another person by means of a deadly weapon or a dangerous instrument. Their commentary under their assault section indicates that in visualizing the operation of the new assault scheme, the following observations are pertinent. One, since actual physical injury is a requisite of assault, and the crime is not established by an unsuccessful attempt to cause such, the crime of attempted assault becomes a meaningful one, at least with respect to the intentional forms of assault. For example, one who with intent to cause serious physical injury swipes at another with a knife is guilty of first degree assault if he succeeds, but only of an attempt to commit that crime if he fails. In view of the physical injury requirement, mere physical contact, which though amounting to a common law battery, does not produce physical injury, is not covered by the revised assault article. Elimination of such from the criminal ambit seems generally salutary. There are, however, two areas where physical, uninjurious, assaultive conduct does merit at least some criminal sanctions. One of these relates to the trivial slap, shove, or kick delivered out of hostility, meanness, or other petty motives. The other involves physically uninjurious but offensive sexual acts. And, well, then they go on to talk further, but they don't say anything more about physical injury.
Right. Well, I can see what we're getting at, because I can see some of the, maybe we're going to cover this if we abolish some of the sexual acts, but we have lots of, presently we prosecute a lot of homosexual offenses under the guise of assault.
Mm.
And I assume that we're following this through to its logical conclusion, by adopting this and so on down the line, we'd be eliminating that because of the definition of physical injury as it relates to assault. But I'm truly a little bit concerned and also a little bit confused, and I'm wondering if in the interest of maybe straightening all of this out, if it might not be appropriate to go on to skip three without making a decision, go on through these rest of these definitions and then go back and look at it.
Okay.
And see what we think. Because I think there is a unanimity here that we have to have serious physical injury defined.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that in mind, let's go on to four. There are no objections.
All right. Serious physical injury means physical injury which creates a substantial risk of death. And there again, there's a term substantial, which isn't defined. Here again, I don't think it should be defined. Or which causes serious and protracted disfigurement, protracted impairment of health, or protracted loss of impairment, or impairment of the function of any bodily organ. This can be related, for example, to the restatement of torts, the definition of serious bodily harm. Bodily harm, they define bodily harm, the consequence of which is so grave that it is regarded as differing in kind, and not merely in degree, from other bodily harm. A harm which creates a substantial risk of fatal consequences is a serious bodily harm, as is a harm the infliction of which constitutes the crime of mayhem. The restatement of torts defines serious bodily harm. And this definition is intended to indicate a grievous physical injury to the person.
This is a limiting definition. We're trying to keep the district attorney from charging somebody with a more serious crime than the facts may support. And that's the purpose of this.
Yeah, or make another category of assault.
Yeah, making a more serious offense out of it.
Yeah, this becomes assault, that's, you see, in the first degree.
That's why we get the substantial, serious, protracted, and so forth.
The restatement of torts has a point of departure here. It says that bodily harm is defined as, serious bodily harm is defined as, quote, bodily harm, consequence of which is so grave that it is regarded as differing in kind and not merely in degree from other bodily harm. So how is other bodily harm defined in the restatement? Do we have that?
I don't, well, my recollection is that bodily harm is not defined in the restatement, but otherwise I think I would have included it in here, but I'm not positive about that. I think they define serious bodily harm, but not bodily harm itself.
What they're doing then is defining serious.
Now, as it relates to bodily harm.
Now,
this again, it's taken from the New York definition of serious bodily harm.
Does the model penal code include these definitions,
no.
Don?
No.
It does not. And we have these basically because of the definitions that we build in, and because of the substantive provisions that we had with regard to the use of burglary and robbery, for example, right?
Burglary and robbery, and now under arson is, and not arson, but assault.
Well, I think it's appropriate that we have these definitions set out here.
It's hard to draw the definitions without looking at the end you're driving at, but at the same time, I'd hate to try to drive to write the other statutes without having at least in mind what you're going to define the crime to be.
And of course, that's what we've been doing for the past year, is draft these statutes, making certain assumptions, which possibly were bad assumptions,
yeah.
Because we had to assume that generally we would adopt, if not the exact language, at least the substance of some of these definitions that are incorporated in, for example, where we followed the New York Code in some of our drafts. We assumed that our definitions would generally follow the New York
match
definition.
Match up to it enough to still leave a crime.
Right.
Well, we define it as physical injury which creates a substantial risk of death, one, or which causes serious and protracted disfigurement. Now that's conjunctive. Both elements have to be present.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, both serious.
It has to be both serious.
Well, this serious and it has to last.
Without repair, it would last a long time. Huh?
Yeah. You want to define protracted now?
Well, I mean, in a layman's book, what a jury is going to understand, protracted is something that it's going to last until it's repaired.
No, it's going to last longer than temporary.
Yeah, it's going to last a long time when it's repaired.
Yeah.
Three, protracted impairment of health. Four, or protracted loss or impairment, disjunctive. Protracted loss or protracted impairment of the function of any bodily organ.
John, I wish we had a copy of your here for one guy. There was conjunctive and disjunctive.
Maybe I have it wrong.
Why the word organ instead of any part of any bodily tissue? What is organ?
Well, those are simple. Everything from the eye to the kidney.
Yeah, that's easy.
But if you lose a toe,
that's a member.
It wouldn't be.
That's disfigurement.
Yeah, that'd be disfigurement, all right.
Classify any of the tissues in the body as an organ.
Any tissue in the body is classified as organ?
Or should slice it out.
Organs that have functions. Organs have functions. Every tissue has a function.
You mean you slice a guy up in a knife and
you yeah. Slice the skin, you disrupted the function of the skin as a protective barrier.
And the skin is an organ.
That's the way I define it.
I think more likely a guy, Joe Average juror, again with a hard hat, look at that as being stomped so bad the kidney, left kidney refused to function anymore, or didn't function until you've been in a machine for 6 weeks. And that if you just got a nice neat slice across the arm, the skin might not have worked for a little while. If you're dead around it for a little while, then you get over it and it isn't that serious. Or you lost an eye, or hearing of an ear, or some of these things.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty esoteric just a definition. Now, Bob Davis used that expression a little earlier today in a committee meeting, and Gordon McKay said, I don't want any of that dirty language in my committee. But it's the same definition that New York has and that Michigan has, right, Don?
Right.
I'm inclined not to find any fault with it.
I like it too.
You like it?
There's two votes.
That's right.
Okay. Ready for a motion?
Move number four.
Okay. I know why Don let schedule this for the afternoon.
No, this afternoon meeting was at the call of the chairman, Mr. Chairman.
He said it'll be interesting to see how long the members keep their resistance up. All right, there's a motion that we approve sub 4 as drafted. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried 3-0. 5. Deadly physical force means physical force that under the circumstances in which it is used is readily capable of causing death or serious physical injury. That under the circumstances in which it is used is readily capable. Now I think the key word there is readily. Don, what's the genesis of this
word readily?
Well, the definition.
Well, it comes from New York also. Assault's where it's going to apply again, and the defense of justification, which would be under one of the major preliminary sections, justification with respect to force used to defend property and this type of thing, it becomes important in that context.
Where did we use, where so far in our work have we used deadly physical force? We haven't
used it so far in any work this subcommittee's had, no.
We use deadly weapon, we use physical injury, we use dangerous weapon, but we haven't. Now, where do you contemplate that we're going to use deadly physical force?
Well, assault and also...
Mayhem?
No, under justification.
But you can't use a deadly physical force to protect certain properties.
Oh, that's appropriate. Well, do we have a hang up on the use of the readily?
No, I don't. But I do have a question about just the use of the word deadly when it includes causing serious physical injury when it isn't readily capable of causing death.
Yeah, I would agree, and I'd like to strike or serious physical injury. It's kind of cool.
Wow.
If the other one's meant to cover serious physical injury, this is meant to cover deadly physical force.
No, this is the one place we're talking about injury, and the other is the result, and the other is the force.
Yeah.
We have to have definite. And if you just make a physical force, then you're going to have a problem defining degree somewhere along the line.
But just the use of the words, it isn't deadly, unless you're changing the meaning of the word deadly, unless it is readily capable of causing death.
Right. Well, but isn't it kind of a subjective thing whether can you conceive of a situation where it would be well, I guess what I'm saying is you could have force that could both cause death or serious physical injury, and it just might be happenstance that one or the other resulted.
Yeah, but what you're saying is that it's a deadly physical force if it's readily capable of causing death, even though it doesn't cause death. But we've said it all when we say if it is readily capable of, whether it actually accomplishes it or not.
Yeah.
Well, what we're doing is giving the prosecution a little out, not having to argue about whether such a long period of time or whether such and such a force is capable of causing death or not. Death or serious physical injury, then you've made it that, you've simplified their job that much.
Yeah, if you're going to strike anything out there, I'd rather see you strike the death part and leave the physical injury, serious physical injury in, because certainly death would fall within, I would think.
Death is a pretty serious physical injury.
Yeah, but I'm talking about using the word deadly for something that it doesn't mean.
Mean deadly.
Yeah.
Well, the other out, of course, there are two or three ways out. One is to make deadly physical force means physical force, so forth, are readily capable of causing death, period. And then creating a new one and saying severe physical force is one that can cause serious injury. Then going down through all the statutes we've got saying deadly or severe physical force.
Right. Now,
serious physical injury doesn't necessarily mean death, it could be pretty deadly.
Bear with me for a second, and I think maybe we answer the objection, in favor of the objection. We're talking about five, deadly physical force, and presently we want it to causing death or serious physical injury. Now look down at six. A deadly weapon, there should be some analogy between them, and we say deadly weapon designed for and presently capable of causing serious physical injury. We've left one of the elements in its definition, or one of the elements out of its definition that we put in deadly physical force. So is there a consistency there? And then look at seven, where we talk about a dangerous weapon, and we're talking about the same thing basically there as we are in six.
So the way to do it is to take the words death or out of five.
The way to do it is to have death in five, put death in six, and leave seven the way it is.
No,
I don't think so. I think that creates a real problem for you, leaving death out of
physical injury out of five.
Here's the thing, John.
The difference between six and seven.
Six and seven are important as they relate to each other, because one is deadly weapon. We're trying to define something that's specifically designed as a weapon.
That's the gun or knife.
Mm. Whereas
the iron bar or your fist.
Right, your bottle. That's where those become important, you see.
Right.
And,
okay. All right.
Whereas deadly physical force may or may not include the use of a weapon. You might inflict such force without even having a weapon.
Just running into a guy with your shoulder.
Beating him with your fist.
I think that the answer, if you're worried about the consistency in the thing, is to remove the words death or from number five. Then you've got deadly physical force being physical force.
But it isn't deadly.
All right. Call it something else instead of deadly.
Dangerous.
Dangerous or severe or something else. Means physical force that under the circumstances which it used is readily capable of causing serious physical injury. Now, a serious physical injury by definition would include death. We've got any problem with that. Then six, again, presently capable of causing serious physical injury, and seven, readily capable of causing injury. Now, the difference then between six and seven is that the unloaded gun becomes a dangerous weapon.
Well, in the circumstances in which it's used.
Is readily capable of causing, readily capable of causing serious injury by hitting a guy over the head with it. The unloaded gun is not presently capable of causing serious physical injury because it's got no bullet on it.
Cartridge.
Isn't that the difference?
Well, now, wait a minute. We had a lengthy discussion about this when we were back in burglary or robbery. The deadly weapon is the gun that has the bullet in it, because it's presently capable of causing serious physical injury. The gun, which it is proven isn't loaded, is a dangerous weapon when under the circumstances in which it's used, it's pistol whipping, it's capable of causing physical
injury.
Anything could be a dangerous weapon.
I'm going to shoot you under the circumstances. It's still a dangerous weapon.
Yeah, well, an automobile is a dangerous weapon if under the circumstances in which it's used, you're trying to run over somebody.
All right. Well, I don't think I have any objection to six or seven. And maybe my overview of this was inappropriate as it relates to five.
Right. If you take death or out of five, what are you going to use in place of deadly?
I think you want deadly, and you want it to be limited to readily capable of causing death. And in order to be completely consistent, you'd have another definition, and that's a dangerous force. Readily capable of causing serious physical injury.
Why don't you just change deadly to dangerous strike death or, and then you're consistent all the way down.
Well, one reason is that we've always had the concept of an assault with a deadly weapon and assault with a dangerous weapon and things like that, and it's a...
Well, yeah, of course, the cases and even the statutes in this state, as far as those terms are concerned, those are used interchangeably. Deadly and dangerous are used interchangeably now. And because what the courts have looked at, and what this definition continues to do, is to look at the kind of use that this instrument's put to. And frankly, I'd much rather see the subcommittee do this. If for the sake of consistency, although this wouldn't meet Bruce's objection to 5, certainly as far as the definitions of 6 and 7, we could, for the sake of consistency, insert death or in there without doing any violence at all to those definitions. But if for the purposes of a statutory definition, we say that deadly force includes death, it's just a question of expanding the definition, isn't it, Bruce, to include physical or serious physical injury?
I don't think we solve anything by changing 5 to dangerous physical force, because on page 4 we see where dangerous and deadly are interchangeably construed or used by the Oregon cases.
Well, I wouldn't be against changing the word deadly in the quotes there to dangerous in 5. Then it would make sense.
What effect would it have if the Supreme Court has said that there isn't any difference between dangerous and deadly?
Well, my...
just as English purity.
Yeah, I don't like to use a word to mean something that it doesn't mean. It just didn't write something. I'm not talking about the ultimate result. I'm just talking about the use of words.
Then would you be willing in the justification section to employ the usage of this phrase, a person's justified if he uses dangerous physical force to thwart an attack or in defense of himself? That's a kind of a departure, isn't it?
Well, I don't think it's a departure. A person is justified protecting against certain things and using a dangerous physical force that's so defined, yeah. And those things are his life and the life of someone, or serious physical harm to himself or his wife or child. Or those things, but he is not justified in using a dangerous physical force to protect his property. I mean, that's the type of thing you're talking about, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I just... your objection is that since we have the serious physical injury component in here, you don't want to call it deadly.
That's about my whole objection.
Well,
which is a little silly, maybe, but...
Well, of course, we say the same thing now under 6. We use deadly with weapon.
Yep.
But there, I think you've got to do it to distinguish between one kind of weapon and a...
Yeah, and it's a little different concept there. The concept is a deadly weapon means that it'll cause serious physical injury, because any serious physical injury might go to death.
Remaining untreated might be.
Yeah. And when a guy's using it, he doesn't know for sure what it's going to cause.
No.
Well, wouldn't...
I think it's superfluous to have at number 5, causing death, serious or serious physical injury, causing death. Causing serious physical injury, obviously death is a serious physical injury, or vice versa. How does it sound if we put in dangerous physical force, which means physical force in circumstances in which it is used greatly is capable of serious physical injury? causes of proceeding death.
James, we've got two ways to go. We can either go that way, or we can take in the other two, 6 and 7, and put death or after causing.
Well, do we have a third option? Could we leave it deadly physical force and say deadly physical force means physical force that under the circumstances in which it is used is capable of causing death? Strike the readily and put a period after death.
Now we're getting into I think you're limiting the prosecution too much.
Serious physical injury.
I don't think you're limiting them because anything is.
Yeah.
Under the circumstances in which it's used.
They get an expert witness in and say, under those circumstances, couldn't have killed the guy. Whatever. Bunged him up for years to come, but it wouldn't have killed him.
It's capable.
That's why I say serious injury instead of death.
You gotta keep the serious physical injury in.
Well, if we're going to go that route, I would personally prefer to insert the death in 6 and 7. I don't know why.
Well, the only reason why is to help Bruce's hang up on deadly. Because that's the only reason to keep death in 5. If we keep serious physical injury in that. Serious physical injury, death is a pretty serious physical injury, so. Would include that.
What do you think of that, Bruce?
I'm not sure what he said.
Amending 6 and 7. Amending 6 and 7 to include the phrase death or before serious.
Mm-hmm, that's all right.
I'd go along with that.
Okay, well then I would move, since this is such an informal committee, and we're all...
All friends.
We're all Indians and there's no chiefs. We adopt 5, let's do it this way. Suppose that Mr. Chandler moves, that 5 is... that we adopt 5 as is, we amend 6 and 7 by inserting the words death or before serious in each appropriate place.
All right.
Is there any further discussion?
Question.
Heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion's carried. Now.
I meant to vote aye. I was just still thinking.
All right. Mr. Spalding votes A.
Well, that was a good
now time. We're down to 3.
Now we're back to 3.
And you know, I said just about all I could say about 3, I think.
I'm sure that Doug Graham looked at this work outline that we had, said to himself,
sentences.
How in the heck did Bob Chandler come all the way over from Ben just to go over a half a page?
7 little sentences.
But what he doesn't know is that we spent 5 meetings on about this much of arson.
Yeah.
And the meetings were longer than this one.
Yes, and then went to the commission and got it sent back.
And we're sending it back on the 22nd.
You're very intuitive.
We do better when we have a big agenda. We tend to not getting these 2-hour arguments over the second sentence.
Well, the reporter scores pretty well on the latter part of the agenda.
If yeah. You if you could get by the second sentence, why, you're all right.
Yeah. You're going to schedule a bigger agenda next time.
That's why we had that. That's why I think that Courtney Arthur began to feel kind of bad the last time we met, is because we got down to the 3 sentences in the end, we were still arguing.
Of course, he wasn't used to the subcommittee like I was.
Well, what are we going to do on physical injury? Because we do have some more things to discuss when we approve or when we finish this.
Well, the technique you used with 5, 6, and 7 seemed to be pretty effective.
death or substantial pain.
No, I mean with respect to the motion.
Well, could I say that Representative Graham moves that we table? I'm free.
That means we just have to talk about it again, doesn't it?
Well,
oh, I think we ought to come to some kind of a decision on it. We'll get the section done.
Yeah, we have.
Well, could I suggest this, Mr. Chairman, that with respect to the work that's coming up for another subcommittee, which will shortly be undertaking to consider the assault draft, that so that we can move ahead there, that this could be provisionally approved with the understanding
tentatively accepted
from this subcommittee that this subcommittee would reserve the right to review this in connection with the assault article. And
that was Chandler's motion.
And that if it later appeared that this definition was going to be satisfactory with respect to the other articles, it would stand approved, and if not, then it would be amended or deleted as at the discretion of the subcommittee.
Well, what you're suggesting, and of course, you know, if it takes the other subcommittee as long as it took Courtney Arthur to do culpability, we all might may have died.
Well, of course, the assault has been drafted.
Oh,
it's all
the
bad.
Other section, of course. The other out, of course, is for Don to send a questionnaire to the members of the New York Commission and ask them what they meant by substantial.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
All right.
I move we adopt this number three as it stands.
Or provisionally or as it stands?
As it stands.
Second.
Okay. All right. Moved and seconded that we adopt three as it stands. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. No. All right. We'll adopt it as it stands, and
The chairman will reserve the right.
Chairman will reserve the right to speak against it on the floor. Okay. This is. You know, you just didn't weaken, did you? You
no.
Fine, you
I
made up your mind.
That's
all right, but I think nevertheless that we will bear this in mind, and at the appropriate place we will possibly might see fit to bring it up again. Now, here's what everybody knows is that there's only been one amendment to these seven subsections from our deliberations today.
Took tangible out.
Now, I think we have to, before we break up, I think we have to come to grips with the question of how far we're going to go with this general definition section. As far as I, and let me lead it off, to give you some sense of what I'm thinking. I think we ought to go further than we have, Don, and I think we ought to embody some of these definitions here that are in the Model Penal Code, like statute, act, voluntary, conduct, actor, acted, writing, which is in our present statute, property, which is in our present statute and comes up time and again and isn't defined, wrongfully, so on.
Some of those would be.
Well, how about our 161010, willfully and negligent? And
right.
Those are culpability terms again, that relating back to the draft that you had before you on December 18th. You know.
Well, but
that's why I didn't put those in here, because they're in that other draft.
They're in the definition section of the Model Penal Code and also in the culpability section, aren't they? Huh?
Some of these we're going to have several places, willfully, negligently, and so forth and so on, unless we go back and take them out of arson and out of assault and out of
we want them in there.
Robbery and so forth and so on.
We want them in there, but are they defined in there, in all those places?
Not in all of them. I think it's worthwhile having them for an oversight purpose, having them
defined in general definitions.
statute, I would think that somewhere in statutes they define statute, just without having to pick that one up.
Well, here...
Commission, I think.
Here's something that we covered in the culpability section, gross deviation. That isn't defined anywhere. I think that should be defined because we use gross deviation someplace else besides the culpability section. That was one of the earliest things that we did. We got into gross deviation.
Gross deviation, yes, with respect to theft.
Justification or defense or something with regard to theft, what was it?
Talked about gross deviation from the terms of the agreement under unauthorized use of a vehicle. We had language in there related to,
Yeah, right there. In a manner constituting gross deviation from the agreed purpose.
And we agreed at that time that we didn't want to define gross deviation.
Because we were going to do it at a later time.
No, I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman.
John, what you're driving at, part of it at least, is that you want the criminal code to be complete within itself. That's why you go for things like statute.
Right.
So that anybody who needs the criminal code can have it printed up in a handy form like this and doesn't have to have the whole set of ORS to go back and dig through. I can see that. I seem to remember Dunn's recollection of gross deviation, that we purposely didn't...
That we purposely don't define it.
Didn't define it, again, being the sort of thing that the witness and two lawyers and the judge all impress upon the mind of the jury, and the jury can decide what's gross.
Okay.
Gross is great.
What about the term that we employ several times? Reasonable person. It's defined in the case law. Do we define it in the general definitions?
No, I don't think we want to try to define that, do we?
All right.
Terms like substantial, for example. I don't think those.
See, I use the same argument. I use the same argument that you're countering me with here when it comes up to defining in the statute physical injury. But I'm amenable to this because I think it should be discussed.
About an element of an offense, a material element of offense, the burden of injecting the issue.
A material element of defense of an offense is defined, of course, in model penal code.
Yeah, as I say, do we want to define it in this? Juror.
Well, I think juror, the only place jurors that I can see in trying to look ahead to the rest of this code, the only place that's going to come up is in connection with interference with juries and driving a juror and that type of thing. I don't think it's going to have any application outside of that specific section.
Public servant.
Well, and I think the same thing applies to public servant, that's going to have limited application. The definition of property, of course, is going to be in our crimes against property section. We've already defined property.
Well, do we finally figure out any protected thing?
No, property means any article, substance, or thing of value, including but not limited to money, tangible and intangible personal property, real property, chose as an action, evidence of debt or of contract.
Yeah, protected. Property came later and chose as an action the one I still
protective property is an arson.
Yeah, still don't understand.
Yeah, because I didn't want to call it.
These guys will throw chose as an action and men's rights every once in a while and they have it.
Well,
but I could have put act and actor and omission, all these things in there. I think you could have them in there if you want, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be more than pleased to redraft this to include those. Because I think those are going to be fairly arbitrary definitions, really.
Yeah, I don't...
Too much you can do with the definition of statute, for example.
Act means a bodily movement, whether voluntary or involuntary.
Well, by the same token, does not possess have the same arbitrary definition? And if so, why do we have it in here?
Possess doesn't have an arbitrary... Possess, standing alone, I think, may not include constructive possession.
Exercise control, as far as you're going to have to explain that to lots of people.
Okay.
Possession includes exercising control.
But,
is it the sense of the subcommittee then that the general definitions that we reviewed today sufficiently encompass the scope of the criminal code, that this is all the further we should go?
I think that we need to define some things aside. I think that for oversight purposes we have to define willfully and negligently and so forth.
I couldn't agree more that these must be defined, and that my reasoning was that we were going to define them under the culpability section.
I think then that we need to define things like conduct or omission as general.
I don't think we need to define conduct or omission.
We have to define statute.
I wouldn't think so, but I'm not definite about it.
Act.
Do we need to define material element of an offense?
We need to define somebody, didn't it?
Yeah, we had that in our, again, in culpability.
Yeah.
Yeah, we hung up on that one.
Is this the definitions that we're giving now?
Yes.
Code, and these others are separate from the part.
Well,
isn't that what you were bringing up at first here, where they should all be under one?
Well, they're all going to be in one chapter, but they're going to be in different sections, isn't that it?
The others would apply throughout the code, as would the general definitions, but they would just be included in a separate section under our preliminary provisions. And all of the preliminary provisions would be designed to apply throughout the rest of the code. Just a question of which section you're going to put these things in, that's all.
Well, we've injected five things here, five definitions that do not appear in either the Model Penal Code General Definition section or in our General Definition Statute. And notwithstanding that, we have 11 definitions in our Definition Statute and 16 in the Model Penal Code. And I'm not so sure that our general definition section here sufficiently covers a waterfront. Writing, for example, was that defined in the...
That's defined in the...
Forgery, in the forgery article.
That is defined in our forgery
it's
article?
Not defined as writing, it's defined as written instrument.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe we're we can't go any further now, and we should somehow or other survey this and come up with a list of terms that, for discussion purposes, to see whether we should include them here or in the applicable sections. I don't know.
Well, going back to my commentary on page 2. I stated that the definitions of some of the terms employed generally are now in 161.010, but most of those definitions in that section deal with culpability language that is in our draft on culpability. And the same way with the New York Revised Penal Law and the Model Penal Code. Here again, most of the Model Penal Code definitions are culpability definitions that I felt we had covered in our culpability draft, and that it's in a separate section, but it still is part of this same article, the same major chapter. It's going to include the definitions of which are included now in our draft section on classes of crimes such as felony and misdemeanor and those terms. the culpability definitions such as intentionally and negligently and recklessly and that sort of thing. And then what was left over, I felt, was were the terms that I put in this draft here today, with exception of things like act and actor and omission.
And that's all you think that were left over?
Yes.
You say with the exception of act or actor and omission,
yeah.
Where are they going to go?
Well, I wasn't planning to put them in any place because I didn't feel they needed defining.
Is it contemplated that act as we've used it, includes where relevant omitted to act? Because this is a peculiar definition that's in the Model Penal Code that would have to be defined and would have a broad application.
An omitted act?
Well, acted includes...
A positive and a negative act.
Acted includes, where relevant, omitted to act.
Where relevant.
You see, if we don't define that specially, then we're saying, and then if it's shown that there was an omission, the person wouldn't be guilty of.
Failure to do something is, in many cases, equally reprehensible with doing something.
Right.
I don't think that we're going to have failure punished under any of our specific crimes unless we set that out in that.
Well, under negligence, maybe. But negligence is defined as act or omission.
Yeah, we defined it.
Maybe you had a good idea from surveying.
Negligently.
I think maybe that's the answer. Don has obviously surveyed it, or somewhat.
Well, I have, and I.
And I suppose it's a continual thing. Maybe we'll come up with some
more definitions.
More definitions later.
But. What I was trying to do now is